Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with David James. That's me, and you are you, and it's a good thing, because we wouldn't want to be all mixed up. Well, here we are again, looking into Maurice Pinet's book, which is some very interesting testimonies to things that are going on. Of course, as I explained to you, it's a Catholic book, and so you have to kind of, they don't know who the Israelites are, they don't know who the Hebrews are, the Hebrews and the Israelites are the same people, and they're not Jews. And so, it just takes time for, you know, I have to explain some things when I go through it. If you're going to be reading along with me, we're going to be starting on page 167. Just before we left off, I wanted to read the previous passage because it helps us to land into it. I'd like to thank everybody who has helped me. It means a lot to know that you're out there, and it means a lot that you're with me on this journey that we're on in learning and serving the Father and loving the Father and helping people. I'm hoping that they're turning back to the Father. I've been praying for people, our people, that as a testimony against the Jews, that the world would begin to turn back towards the Father and to shun the Antichrist. The world is too Antichrist at this moment. It is just absolutely insane what's going on. So, I just wanted to clear up a few things. Thank you so much. One fellow gave me a real act of kindness, and he bought a couple of items for me and some dog food for Miss Elkie, which was wonderful. I just think that's a wonderful thing. It helps me. I'm able to, you know, breathe a little bit, which is important, you know what I mean? It's important that, you know, I'm not asking for Rolex watches. I'm not interested in having a Rolex watch. I don't care about any of those things, you know what I mean? These are things that, I was standing with two people that I know in the last couple of years, and they were wearing Rolex watches, and I didn't even know because I don't care about any of that stuff. I never did and I never will. So we're talking about, you know, the basics here. You know what I mean? So another thing, the newsletter, I'm in the middle of writing the November newsletter. And there's some nice things coming this week. I'm not going to tell you a lot about it because you should just be signed up for the newsletter and you can get all the different things. I usually include a few PDFs or whatever and some links and the best shows of the month as far as I'm concerned and things like that. And I also write to you and talk to you about things. So it's a good thing to be signed up for the newsletter. And it doesn't cost you anything or anything like that. And if you're not signed up, you can always go on to davidjamesboston.com and I post the newsletters up there. So, we're learning a lot, there's no doubt about it. And I'm going to be getting to the fireside chats, don't worry. I love fireside chat, and a lot of people do. And I know that I've done many this year, and I've done, you know, an amazing amount between last year and this year when I started that show. And we will get to it. It's like I told you, I'm accomplishing so many things in so many ways that, you know, you got to juggle everything. I work on levels, you know what I mean? So I'm working on one project, then I get that moving, and then I go to the next project, and I work on that, then I come back and keep this one continue. You know what I mean? It's multitasking, and I'm gaining a lot of ground, finally. Thanks to the brethren, thanks to wonderful sisters, thanks to the Father in heaven, most of all. So, we're on page 167, and it says, this passage of the newer part of the Testament shows us how the Jews accused St. Paul of teaching all men everywhere against people. Remember, we read that last week. I'm just reading this to get us back in the groove. They caused him in slanderous manner to appear as an enemy of the people, which is exactly what the ADL does to us American people in our countries, right? They slander us and they say that we are the enemy. The white people are the enemy of the American people, but we are the American people, you see? And so they do this in order to justify killing. And that's what they did to Paul. More than 19 centuries afterward, when the Jews in the Soviet Union and other communist lands wished to kill someone, they accused him of being an enemy of the people and an enemy of the working classes. The methods have remained the same. They have not altered in approximately 2,000 years. That's because they can't come up with anything. They're not creative. They also slanderously accused St. Paul of preaching against the temple, just as in mock trials of communist lands, they accused the future victims of having carried out a conspiracy against the Soviet Union or the proletarian state. Finally, they also accused St. Paul of having brought non-Israelites into the temple and thus defied the holy place, when in reality, those Jews defile the holy place and defile our lands. For in those days, the Jews regarded the temple as closed to non-Israelites, just as they now regard Jewry as closed to men of other races. That's not true. You see, this fellow who's writing this book does not understand Jewry, does not understand that they have to race mix. They've race mixed with every race there is many, 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 many times. And they do this because there's no life force in their blood, as you know I've told you in the past, that we learned from B.F. Jackson. And there's no life force in their bone marrow, so they have to mix. But this fellow just says they now regard Jewry as closed to men of other races. But the thing is they say that, but they don't do that. That's the key. Continuing. Then they only allowed new converts as far as the door of the temple, thus only to the outside door. Now they accept, so they say, non-Christians and Christians in some lands into Jewry, but also only to the outside door. In that by deceit, they only allow the latter into the peripheral organizations and never to enter the real synagogues and communities of the Jewish people. In this, their methods have also remained the same. The book of the scripture mentioned further relates that when the captain allowed Paul to address his words to the angry Jews in order to calm them, this occurred in the Acts of the Apostles chapter 22. And they gave him audience unto this word, and then lifted up their voices and said, "Away with such a fellow from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live." And in verse 23, "And as they cried out and cast off their clothes, and threw dust into the air." Yeah, the Jews are queer, and they were always wanting to take off their clothes. There's no doubt about that. We see here the veritably possessed Jews, and that's exactly what it is, who centuries later, in the midst of the Jewish communist terror, were to cut their unfortunate victims into pieces, I hope you're listening, with all their application of cruelty. And you know the Hebrew word neshab means to listen or prick up your ears. This passage from the newer part of the Testament goes further. Acts of the Apostles, chapter 22, verse 30. "On the morrow, because he," i.e. the Roman captain, "would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and commanded the chief priests and their council to appear, and brought Paul down and set him before them." Chapter 23, verse 6. "But when Paul perceived that the one part were Sadducees and the other were Pharisees, he cried out in the council, 'Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am called in question.'" Now, a lot of people, I'm commenting here, a lot of people would say, Paul is a Pharisee, so he's a Jew, because all Pharisees are Jews. But see, that's not necessarily so. However, anything's possible, because he's the son of a Pharisee. But I don't believe the Apostle Paul was Jewish, because he said he was of the tribe of Benjamin, and he said he was an Israelite, not a Jew. So he said, "Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am called in question." And when he said so, "there arose a discussion between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the multitude was divided." Why, of course it was. "For the Sadducees say there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit." In other words, there's no devil too, right? You hear that today, right? Now you can see why they're so sad, you see? It's an old joke, but it's a good one. "But the Pharisees confessed both, that," I guess they say that they believed in resurrection and angels and spirits. "And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part rose and strove, saying, 'We find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or angel hath spoken to him, let us not fight against God.'" A magnificent lesson in the how for the cause of good the internal differences of opinion of the Jewish parties and sects could be used. One can do this in effective form. If one knows the secret interior of Jewry, which permits deception through the false combat maneuvers, which are frequently pretended among one another, in order to attain definite political goals. Now, we see this today. We see this with Trump, right? We see that they're trying to unseat the man. Now listen, I'm not pro-Trump. This is all just one of those things to make democracy look like it works, but it doesn't work. So, listen to this. I'm going to read this line again. If one knows the secret interior of Jewry, which permits deception through false combat maneuvers, would you call that false flags? Which are frequently pretended among one another in order to attain definite political goals. Are they attaining political goals through false flag shootings, etc., etc.? Why, of course they are. But the funny thing about it is the more of these false flags they do and pretend shootings and all this stuff, even if it's a real one for a change, the people go out and buy more guns. The Falasha Jew Obama was freaking out because he was allowing all this stuff to happen, these false combat maneuvers. Isn't this interesting? Think about what I'm saying here. And instead of, you know, them passing more laws which would take our guns away, more people bought more guns than ever before. So, after the violent struggle that was inflamed between the Jewish leaders mentioned, and which compelled the Roman captain to use his soldiers, the apostle continues his report in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 23, verse 12. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. Let me stop that right there. Now, we've heard of hunger strikes with people in prisons all over the world, right? So what he's saying here is that you're putting yourself under a curse when you're doing these type of things. Mostly because they wanted to kill Paul, though. That's probably why. But very interesting. It's not a good thing if you don't eat or drink, right? So anyway, And there were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. Oh, the Jews in a conspiracy? Oh, no, it couldn't be. George Bush said, let us not entertain any conspiracy theories about 9/11, about the Jews and their father. Very interesting, isn't it? By the way, Miss Elke's just below me, and this is a test to see if she can stay in with the shows. I usually put her out with the shows, but she's being a good girl. So, we continue. And they came to the chief priests and elders and said, we have bound ourselves under a great curse that we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul. Now therefore, ye with the council, signify to the chief captain, and he will bring him down unto you tomorrow, as though you would acquire something more perfectly concerning him, and we, or over he come near, if ever he come near, are ready to kill him. So, think about this logically right now. So these Jews are going to kill somebody else. I mean, you see, this is what's always gone on. They wanted to trap him and kill him, like they did with Yeshua. Jesus, like they've done with all of our brothers all the way from Abel to Zacharias, or Zechariah, it says both, and all the way to this very moment that I'm speaking to you. The foresight of the captain, who knew the Jews only too well, frustrated their criminal plans. Therefore, he sent Paul away under the guard of 200 soldiers and 2 officers. Verse 25 explains that the Roman captain did this because he feared that the Jews could snatch away Paul with force and kill him. Also, he feared that afterwards they would slander him by saying that he had accepted their money. This enlightening passage of the newer part of the Testament clearly explains that the Jews, as swindlers and inventors of the hunger strike, there it is, folks, already put into practice in the times of St. Paul. You see what we're learning here? You see, this is valuable information. Because it's a testimony, ladies and gentlemen, that really there is nothing new under the sun. It's very, very interesting for me to find out that this was going on back then. Now, when I read this, and I've read these things many times, I never realized this. See, one thing about the Father's Word that's so wonderful is you could read it many times, and every time you learn something new, and then later in life, when you have a new set of eyes, so to speak, now you really see things more in depth than you ever have before. Because of your level of understanding and its ever-growing situation. So, you see that they wanted to bribe this fellow. So, do they do that today? Why, yes, they do. They own probably all of Congress, practically. They've bought and sold these people. That's why I call them sellouts. I call them the pigs. In my article, Pigs, there's two sets of pigs. And one of them are the people that are sellouts from our own race and other races, obviously, now. And then there's the Jews with the three parentheses around them, pigs. And when you read that article, it's really kind of cool because it really shows you what's going on. See, the pigs serve the pigs with the parentheses. So not only would they, this is how dirty these Jews are. Not only would they bribe him, right? And if he accepted the bribe, then they would slander him. You see, there is no honor among thieves. And that's just as plain as the nose on their face. So they invented the hunger strike, and it's a curse they put on themselves. So, the Acts of the Apostles does not explain whether after the salvation of St. Paul through the caution of the Roman captain, the fasting Jews kept their oath until death. However, the silence of the apostle allows us to assume that with the Jews, then, as with the hunger strikes of our days, the Hebrew comedians, as soon as they could not achieve their goal, found a suitable excuse to halt the strike. Of course, they're not Hebrews, by the way. The Jew comedians, as soon as they could not achieve their goal, found a suitable excuse to halt the strike. So, on the other side, one sees that even in those distant times, they applied the system of murdering a prisoner on the road when the latter was brought from one place to another. Okay? I hope you're neshabbing. Because, you see, that's what it's all about. You've ever heard of, now, in the old cowboy movies, they might have a prisoner and they were transporting the prisoner and they kill them on the way to where they're transporting them to. You see? These Jews are little men and they don't look like men at all. They're all hunched over and this and that like demons are. But they sure can spill blood. They have no conscience whatsoever, and spilling blood brings them joy. Remember, they were licking the entrails of their victims, licking the blood off their entrails, and dancing in the blood. Okay, so anyway, one further observes that even the Romans had anxiety before the slander of the Jews, whom they doubtless knew as masters of the disastrous art of slander, you get it? In order to gain knowledge of the wicked activity of Jewry and its mode of action, modus operandi, one scarcely needs to read the framed protocols of the learned elders of Zion, quote-unquote, the teachings of the Holy Bible, as well as other reliable and undisputed, documents suffice, which often originated from the most unhoped-for Jewish sources. After St. Paul was led before the deputy governor, the Acts of the Apostles continues in chapter 25, verse 2. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul. the deputy, of course, and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait on the way to kill him. They wanted to kill Paul on the way. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither, which means thereafter. Let them therefore, said he, which are able, to go down with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul. Hello. Do you hear this going on? You know, one time, let me just tell you this, I was in a supermarket, and I was making some kind of a comment to somebody while I was putting the bread on the shelf, and they were too. And I was talking about them having a gala, and I made some kind of a comment. And there was a Jew there, and he began to take a fit and stomp his feet and scream as loud as he could. And he went and reported me too. You see, this is what they do. You know, they hear something they don't like and they figure, I'll get this guy fired out of his job. See, they'd have no problem doing this because people kowtow to these Jews. They just start screaming. You see, if it were me and somebody was taking a fit like that, I'd throw them out. I wouldn't do what they said. Now, if you hit them or something, that's one thing. But this is something totally different. They were upset because of a word I said. And he just went absolutely crazy, and everybody's standing there looking at him, and I'm not embarrassed because I don't care. But I didn't get thrown out of my business at that point. But it could have happened. So this is it, right? This is what they say right in here. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove, of course. While he answered for himself, neither against the laws of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offered anything at all. In order to understand this terribly terrible tragedy, one must bear in mind that St. Paul was a devout man and illuminated by the grace of God. Very interesting choice of word there, ladies and gentlemen. To such an extent that he is worthy of being regarded as one of the greatest saints of Christianity. Never mind. Nevertheless, the Jews, with their natural falsity and their insane tenacity, fell into a fury with him in the manner described in the preceding passages of the Holy Bible. Now, you see, this is a demonic happening. The demons, these Jews have lots of demons living in them because their father is the devil, and it's natural that they get touched as children and all kinds of things happen to them. And naturally demons inhabit them. They're into such awful things that demons just, they can't help but hang around them. So this, when they rise up like this and start, you ever see them over by that so-called wall that it has nothing to do with the temple, because Jesus said that every stone would be put down and everyone was. So this wall is another Jewish fable. But they go over to this wall and they start bobbing their heads back and forth like mental patients. And I'm not being funny there. I'm telling you, when I was a younger lad, about 17 or so, I worked in a hospital and I was mopping the floors and those kinds of things. And I would go during these things, and this is exactly what the mental people do. Not all of them, but, you know, I've seen this enough to say, okay, we got problems here. And these Jews do this very, very, you know, same thing here. Don't just take that as something like, you know, oh, well, it doesn't really mean anything. They're just praying and they're antsy, right? They got ants in their pants. But No, they've got mental problems. The Jews even will admit that they have tons of mental problems. They have skin problems. They have mental problems. You can't hang around with demons and you can't mix races without some kind of retribution or some kind of ramifications. It's just that simple. I mean, you know, impurity causes problems physically, mentally, and spiritually. And the Jews are laden down with this. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. So the first, Eustace Mullins said that the first mental hospital that was created in New York for Jews. It wasn't created for white man. So, it says, let me see where we continue, right here. The problem was sharpened still more as a result that not only the Jews from Palestine, but also those from the most different parts of the world exposed their murderous and godless instincts, and that not only the sect of the Pharisees, but also the Sadducees, who were the opponents of the former. It was not individuals isolated and without representation who oozed such maliciousness, but the high priests, the scribes, and the leading personages and most illustrious men of Israel, all cut from the same cloth. Well, no, Jews aren't cut from the same cloth as true Israelites. And what he's saying here, another testimony of this, just so you'll know, I mentioned this before. In the movie Der Jude, or The Eternal Jew, the German documentary, the Germans went to Palestine, and these Jews are not from Palestine. They were there with us, like they're here in America with us, you know, nipping at our heels, so to speak. But they went to Jerusalem to see if the Jews, we saw in the film how the Jews lived there. They were merchants. No farmer was among them. They didn't want to do any work, etc., etc., etc. So they went to Palestine to see what the Jews, how the Jews lived there, and they studied it. And they said the very same thing as it's saying here. They're the exact same no matter where they are in the world. So this is not something where there's a rogue group of Jews. Like I always say, there's no such thing as a good Jew. Even a dead Jew is not a good Jew. That's one of my sayings I've coined. And it's true. It's not just a slander. Yeah. So, the passages of the newer part of the Testament teach us to recognize the danger that modern Jewry represents for mankind, whose infamy exceeds the boundaries of everything which other peoples could possibly imagine. Therefore, the popes and councils repeatedly called them perfidious Jews. Oh, quote unquote. We've heard another Catholic fellow that pretends he hates Catholics use that term, which words, together with other eloquent expressions, figure in the liturgy and the rites of the Holy Church. He's talking Catholicism, blah, 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 in which the Jews would like to see removed completely and utterly in order to thrust the Catholics into still greater uncertainty about the monstrous perversity of our thousand-year-old enemies, and in order to compel us all the easier by using their deceitful maneuvers and usual surprise blows. The most significant thing is that in the description of the falsity of this generation of vipers, as Jesus had called them, the newer part of the Testament of the Holy Bible coincides perfectly with the writings that were composed hundreds of years later by the church fathers, with the ideas that are contained in the Quran and Muhammad, Quran of Muhammad, with the prescriptions of different church councils, with the trials of the Holy Inquisition, and with the opinion of Martin Luther, as well as with the accusations that have been made in different countries by savants of the problem. and in fact by Catholics, Protestants, Russian Orthodox, Mohammedans, and even by unbelievers like Voltaire and Rosenberg. Yes. All these have, without previous agreement, agreed during the last 1,000 years to denounce the high degree of falsity and malice among the Jews. This proves that, unfortunately, this wickedness and falsity, very dangerous for the remaining peoples, correspond to a confirmed and undisputed reality. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the way it is. There's no doubt. They don't want you to say anything about them because they know there's a lot to say about them. You know what I mean? They know what they're doing, and all the smiles in the world can't erase the evil that these Jews do. And all the tears of the Jews in the world cannot erase what these people have done, what they are doing, and what they're going to be continuing to do. So it says here, the apostle Matthew spread the word of God far and wide, at first in Macedonia and afterwards in Judea, and converted many to believe in Jesus Christ through his sermons and his miracles. It is said that the Jews could not suffer this. Therefore, they laid hands upon him, stoned him to the point of almost killing him, and finally he was decapitated on the 24th of February. So Matthew was decapitated. I did not know that. You see, these Jews are killers. They're Christ killers, and they're killing the offspring. Like I said, I thought this was interesting. Nobody mentioned it. Nobody said, wow, that's kind of interesting. But just as Jesus, or Yeshua, was a lamb to the slaughter, he was the lamb from the foundation of the world, which was typified by the ram from the foundation of the world when Abraham was to sacrifice his son. Remember the ram from the foundation of the world that was caught in the thicket? And remember I told you how Jesus is the lamb of the foundation of the world? And they put a crown of thorns in his head. He was caught in the thicket. You get it? Very interesting, isn't it? Well, this is what happens. They're Christ killers. So, as I was saying, Jesus is the lamb that was slaughtered. But we, through all of time, have also been lambs, because we are sheep, for the slaughter. Our people are being slaughtered today just as much as they ever were, and we are the lambs, we are the sheep. Isn't it interesting that there are Christian doctrines that are doctrines of devils, saying that you will never be harmed by anything, and you could... Listen, that's a lie. And they try to teach people, oh, you're going to be taken out, and you're not going to suffer what the rest of the world is going to suffer. Do you really believe that? And if you did believe that, when the suffering came, you would curse God, wouldn't you? You'd say he's a liar. You'd say his doctrine was a lie, right? That's the purpose of it. So I use the term the silence of the lambs, which they made the movie. You understand it now? The silence of the lambs. Can you read between those lines? Because that fellow who actually played Apostle Paul one time was the killer in that movie. Chapter 11, the Roman persecutions were called forth by the Jews. I hope you're listening, because this is very important for you to understand, that whatever great empire there has been in the times past, these Jews have gotten in and they have brought these empires down by getting the people to sin against the Father, and to go against his laws, and to go against his statutes, and to race mix, etc., etc., eating pig, etc., etc., and on it goes. This is the same thing that's happening today. This is the same thing that's always been going on. The devil tried to get Abraham and Isaac off the path. And Abraham had mentioned that to Isaac. The devil's purpose is to get you off the path. What is the path? It's the narrow road that leads to eternal life. And the devil's and his children's purpose is to get you off that path, to make you go astray, like Balaam's donkey. And in that story about Balaam, we see again what the Jews do. They wanted to know how to get the Israelites and to destroy them. And how was it? How did Balaam tell him it would be? If he got them to race mix with these non-Israelite women, told them to dress up and, you know, act certain whorish ways, and if you could do that, if you could get them to disobey Yahweh, if you could get them to race mix, if you could get them to do all kinds of things that are against the Father and His will, then, as the Father said, if you do these things, I'll have to judge you like I have judged them. I'll have to do to you what I would do to them. And the Jew knows this, but we don't, we as the lambs don't seem to understand that. I mean, I do, and I think many of you do too. Because you're staying on the path. And may the Father keep you on the path, and me as well, in the mighty name of Yahweh. But you see, many people, they just don't understand that somebody is making them go astray. They don't understand about the ideologies. They don't understand what's really taking place in their lives. And they don't know who's doing it to them, which is even more important. See, the Jews, this is the conundrum I speak about all the time. Of course, I might have not spoken about it just recently, but we're in a world where we need to obey our Father. And we need to pay attention to Him. And we need to have a relationship with Him. But we're in a world with people like the Jews and the two-legged beasts of the field. And especially the Jews, who are the most subtle beast of the field. They are the offspring of the most subtle beast of the field. They know there's no hope of eternity for them. So they don't have to toe any line like you do. They don't have to obey the Father's will like you do. They don't have to. They know they're being destroyed. This is the conundrum now. They know that they're being destroyed and there's no future in eternity for them. But they know that you have this possibility. And that if you do what's right and so on and so forth and you obey the Father and so on and so forth, that you will be in eternity. Well, they want to see to it that you don't make it. They're not going to make it, so they don't want you to make it. They don't have any part in the future, so they don't want you to have any part in it. And so they get you to disobey. They get our people to disobey the Father. Race mix, idolatry. Think of the Jewish show, American Idol. Hello. There are people in droves watching this foolish thing. Do you understand? American Idol. And not a thought is ever given to it. This is the conundrum. So, this is chapter 11. As I said, the Roman persecutions were called forth by the Jews. We have already studied in the preceding chapter the various attempts that the Jews made in order to incite the Roman authorities against St. Paul. They accused him of being against Caesar and recognizing another king in his place, by which they meant Jesus. Concerning these intrigues and slanders, an undisputed document, in example, the newer part of the Testament of the Holy Bible, provides us with knowledge. You see, well, that's why the Jews hate the newer part of the Testament. The Testament is only one Testament. They are the ones that divided it. You know what I've talked about. But they especially divided it because they could pull off their "we're God's chosen people" by claiming the older part of the Testament. And then this newer part of the Testament they could claim is anti-Jewistic. Because there's a lot of information in the newer part of the Testament that really socks it to the Jews. You get it? You know it too, right? So these attempts to incite the might of the Roman Empire against nascent Christianity followed frequently upon one another. Even if for some time without success, it is historically proven that the Romans in religious matters were tolerant and also in no way hostily, disposed towards the Christians, as is provided by the conduct of Pilate and in the case of Jesus, and the favorable interventions of the imperial authorities in the persecutions. And of course, that the deputy and these different people, they wouldn't obey the Jews and harm Paul. They saw no fault in him, right? So you see, it's not the Romans that want to kill. It's not the Romans that want to persecute. It's the Jews. And that's the same exact way it is today. You know it is. So I'm going to start from here. Romans in religious matters were tolerant and also in no way hostily disposed towards Christians, as is proved by the conduct of Pilate in the case of Jesus and the favorable interventions of the imperial authorities in the persecutions unleashed by the Jews against St. Paul and the first Christians. The following fact is very revealing and is recorded by Tertullian and Orosius, who remarked that before the Jew attempts at persecution arose against Christians, the emperor Tiberius had a law published that threatened with death those who accused Christians. Very interesting. We could certainly use that law today, couldn't we? Did you hear that? Now, I'll read that again. The emperor Tiberius had a law published that threatened with death those who accused Christians. I suppose that's where the Jews get the ideas, huh? In the 9th year of his government, Claudius commanded all Jews to leave Rome because according to the evidence of Flavius Josephus, they had caused Agrippa, his wife, to take on Jewish customs, or also, as Suetonius writes, because frequent upheavals gave the impetus of the persecutions of Christians. Let me stop right there. This should reveal to you something very important. Flavius Josephus, they say, is a Jew, but he's not. Just the name Flavius should tell you something. He was a Roman citizen. And they were trying to force his wife to take on Jewish customs. Unless Agrippina is how you say it. Agrippina. It could be Claudius's wife, but not sure which thing is, but frequent upheavals gave the impetus to the persecutions of Christians. Frequent upheavals, like the Jew that jumped up about me. You understand what I'm saying? That's just one example of what goes on. One sees that the pagan emperor Claudius was tolerant in the extreme towards Christians. When he became tired of the mutinies that the Jews caused, he expelled them from the city of Rome. See, mutiny. The kingdom is a ship, like it is today with the UCC. And the Jews are mutinous. Always trying to capsize the ship, always trying to sink the ship. People do get tired of that. Now, interestingly enough, if it means that Agrippina was Claudius's wife, they were trying to influence her to become Jewish so that she could influence Claudius to persecute Christians. Now, this happened to Nero, as far as I understand. Not sure if Nero was actually a Jew or if it was just his wife that was a witch and a Jew. And, of course, it caused problems for the Christians. When he became tired of the mutinies, that the Jews caused, he expelled him from the city of Rome. The Acts of the Apostles also report this expulsion. One sees here the Jewish tendency to cause their influence to rise up to the steps of the throne by their controlling the empress in order to exert influence on the emperor. See? Just what I just said. I didn't read that. That's exactly what it is. Amazing. So I do see clearly, ladies and gentlemen. You can see that. We're off to see the sea, to see what we can see. The Jews are trying to capsize the ship, but they have no eternity. Yeah. So they were trying to get the empress to be a Jewess so she could taint and influence the emperor. After all, Judaism is paganism, so they're very close, so it should have been rather easy to pull that off, if you know what I mean. So it continues. In so doing, they held to the completely distorted teachings of the biblical book of Esther, giving this an ambitious interpretation. Esther, a Jewess, well, you see, this is something that is not, I don't believe is true. And I think I'll just skip this. Hi, Miss Elke. She's down there, and I think she was sleeping and making little noises. But anyway, I think we'll skip this little part because I'm not going to talk about the book of Esther being a Jewish book. There's a lot of questions about this book. Bertrand Comparé said the name Yahweh isn't in that book, and he questions it himself. So, however, it says, in the case of the Emperor Claudius, in the case of Emperor Claudius, the attempt openly failed for the Jews to make her a Jewess, which did not occur with Nero, so that is the way it is. So in other words, Nero's wife was coddled into being a Jewess and to practice Judaism, which is paganism anyway. But she influenced Nero, you see. Isn't it interesting that the Jews knew that in the garden, their forefather, their Cain, well, not Cain, but the angel, he knew to go to the woman so that she would influence the man. And this has not changed even to today. Some things work, and if something's working, you don't fix it. We're the ones that are supposed to fix these things, though. See, it works against us, so we need to fix it. However, it works for the Jews, unfortunately for us. So it said that this did not occur with Nero, with whom it was successful in bringing close to him a Jewish named Poppaea, who soon transformed into the lover of the emperor, and according to some Jewish chronicles, into the real empress of Rome. She was successful in exercising a decisive influence upon this ruler, you see. Tertullian, one of the church fathers, says in his work Scorpius, the synagogues are the places from whence the persecutions against Christians emanate. And in his book, Ad Nations, it looks like, the same Tertullian writes, from the Jews come the slanders against the Christians. Let me stop right there and comment on this. You see, what's very interesting about this is the Jews are the enemies of the whole world. They're the enemies of Christianity. I can't say everybody can see it, but you and I certainly can see it. It's so easy to see. It's just incredible. Yet the people that are in the Jewish version of Christianity that are in a mixed priesthood cannot see it. And it's amazing that no matter what kind of thing you present to them, they won't listen. They've been programmed, and there's something that will not allow you to touch the programming. However, the Holy Spirit can do anything. The Father can do anything. So what's impossible with men is certainly possible with Yahweh or the Holy Spirit. So it says the synagogues are the places from whence persecutions and Christians against Christians emanate. What is that telling you? During the rule of Nero, tolerance at first reigned towards the Christians. However, the emperor finally gave way to the persistent intrigues of his Jewish lover, Poppaea. You see, his Jewish lover. See, the Jews send the Jewesses in to infiltrate the white men of the world. Like what happened with that fellow down there that had his own business, that cult. They sent a bunch of Jewesses down there because he could have competed with Jewry. He was a very intelligent white man. And they sent the Jewesses in, and pretty soon it was a sex cult. You know what I'm talking about, NX, IVM, or whatever it is there. So the emperor finally gave way to the persistent intrigues of his Jewish lover, Poppaea. Reminds me of Poppy, right? Who is described as the originator of the idea of laying the blame for setting fire to the city of Rome upon the Christians, based on which the first cruel persecutions of Christians that was carried out by the Roman Empire was justified. Listen to this. The Jesuit fathers, can you say Jewry? R. Lorca and S.J. R. Garcia, Villoslada, S.J. and F.J., whatever, Montalban, have established the following in connection with the Christian persecutions by pagan Rome against the weak and defenseless Christians by Nero. Again, lambs to the slaughter. I'll just read this last paragraph and we can start from right here next week. This last paragraph is, the Jews were the most active elements in the promotion of the climate of hatred against the Christians. Hello? Whom they regarded as falsifiers of the Mosaic Law. But who are the real falsifiers, ladies and gentlemen? This is the Jewish way to always call others what they are. This activity of the Jews must have exercised a notable influence, for it is known to us that they already enjoyed a great regard in Rome at the time of Nero, and that on the occasion of the martyrdom of St. Peter and St. Paul, some had hinted at the idea that the latter were killed out of the jealousy of the Jews. Well, I'm going to leave you with that idea and that paragraph. And that is page 173. I must say, you know, I do a lot of commenting on things, and rightly so, it needs to be done. But just from this little amount, look what we've gleaned. I mean, you see, it's not a waste of time what we're doing, ladies and gentlemen. If you think like, well, what's the point of reading this book? The point is, you're having the patterns of the Jews, which exist today and existed then, confirmed and reconfirmed. This is important. Because I don't want you to think like anything I tell you, you just believe. We need to prove these things. And prove them we are. Remember Robert Edward Edmondson's book? Right? That was the Connecting the Dots series? Yes. We prove these things. We don't just say things and say, well, that's the way it is. We prove them. And so, at the end of a show, especially the Rabbit Hole Radio Show, I always give some good advice. And that is, don't go down the wrong hole.
This world is not the place for me.
see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Of time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without a face.